The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's Tuesday, I promised, and I make good on most of my promises. There's a lot going on, and we're going to talk this first hour to a friend of mine and a friend of yours, because he is standing firmly on the First Amendment, and I hope you listen to the disclaimer at the beginning of each hour of the program here and across the network. It's very serious. Unless we have a full and unfettered First Amendment, we have nothing. Everything will disintegrate. Now, as most of you know, the internet, the alternative media, well, the mainstream media too, is full of Zionist gatekeepers. Some of the most well-known, or maybe not, depending on your frame of reference, Noam Chomsky, Amy Goodman. These are people who really run interference for world Zionism. What is Zionism? Look it up. It is a geopolitical movement of world domination. It is a secular movement, not a religious or spiritual movement. It is a geopolitical movement. Now, David Duke has done more to bring the light of reality for all of us onto the issue of Zionists, Zionism, and many of them, of course, hide behind Judaism. They use it as an incredibly effective shield. David Duke, Dr. Duke, has done more than anyone I know of to help us understand what is really going on. And there are those out there who know damn well what's going on, but who will not speak to it because financially it doesn't benefit them. They play the game, they make the money, and they're fat cats. All right? And there are a lot of them out there. Today, David Duke got to be a guest. And I want to commend my friend Alex Jones for inviting David Duke on. They had a conversation. David is with us tonight to discuss that conversation and tell us how it went. Hello, David. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff, and I should start addressing you formally as hello, father of internet radio.
Oh, God, please. Thank you. That's very kind of you. But the big story today was of you and how this whole thing happened and how it went down. How did it come about?
Well, it came about because a caller, it shows you the power of the individual. You know, all of us can take and do certain things to really make a difference. And this one caller to the show said that he really respects and likes the work of Dr. David Duke, that he's not a white supremacist, because Alex Jones said something to that effect before. And he said that you need to invite him on the show. And And Joan surprisingly said that, well, I've been considering that for a while. I was thinking about bringing him on, and he said that I will bring him on. He said, I'm going to invite David Duke on. I didn't know if it was actually going to happen. I called them. They called me. And we set a few ground rules. I explained to Alex that, you know, there's a lot of bad things said about everybody. It doesn't do either of us any good to have
spitting in the wind
contest, you know,
yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use the PISS word, but it doesn't help anybody to do that. That we should discuss things. I know we agree on some things, a lot of things, and we disagree in a lot of things. But I think it'd be valuable, and I believe a lot of people in the audience will appreciate what I say. And I want to know myself what your positions are.
You know, when I started the network, one of the first things I wanted to do was to bring David Duke on as a regular, which was very lucky to be able to do. He is not afraid to speak his truth. All right, I'm not saying it's a universal truth, but he has a clear vision of the founding fathers of America and the idea that some people on this planet are in it for the money, in it for the notoriety, not necessarily just talk show hosts, all kinds of people. And David has been a mainstay of the network, and I think anyone who has watched his work, it's brilliant, because he quotes the opposition that he is attempting to expose, their own words, their own statements, their own time, their own space. It's brilliant, and he doesn't have to sit and pontificate about anything. All right, so you got the thing together. You agreed on the ground rules. And
I also, from the very beginning, a lot of people ask me why I was talking about, you know, I want the time, my fair time here, you know. But I did that to basically just remind him that he has a reputation for running over people and really, you know, becoming very haughty and so forth. But I wanted to remind him and the audience so that hopefully does a preventative thing. And he did give me adequate time to speak. And boy, you give me time to speak, and it can be pretty amazing when you hear the data, the documents, the
ideas.
You've
got the facts, David. You've always had the facts. And you see, that's what really bothers people. It irritates them. They cannot expose you. There's nothing to expose. All you are is a reflector of reality.
Yeah, I explained too that I explained even how we talked a lot about the so-called quote racial issues, and you know I made it real clear to him. I said that he was kind of saying that I might be a mirror image of Al Sharpton or something like that. I'm no mirror image of Al Sharpton or Farrakhan. He said Farrakhan because Farrakhan recently talked about killing, you know, white people. I've never said to kill anybody. In fact, I've always condemned any sort of violence, and I would never condone that. Nobody in my organization, even as far back as 40, 50 years ago, has ever done anything like that. I was a young man, and by the time I was a very young teen, literally 13, 14 years old, I came to believe that the European people were under attack, that there was a plan to make us a minority in our own nations, in America, Canada, the world. Most people thought that was crazy. I'm not saying I originated those thoughts. I read a lot of very brilliant European American writers, and we've had a plan run by the Zionists, the Jewish extremists, who've had a long running hatred of the European Christian community and the European people, that they wanted to literally destroy the European American Christian community across the world. And that's exactly, of course, what's happened. I remember at LSU as an 18-year-old student talking about this and at Free Speech Alley talking about this and saying that if we don't change this new immigration law that was passed in 1967, that we are going to become a minority in our own country. And a lot of people laughed.
You said that in 67?
67, 68, uh-huh. Actually, is when I said it. And the school newspaper had an article that said, you know, professors refute David Duke's claim that white people will become a minority in America in the next few years.
Yeah.
And, of course, That's exactly what's happening. We have the other day, Mr. Biden, Vice President of the United States, literally, and this was reported by the mainstream media, that he was talking to some diplomats from South America, and he said, well, white people are going to be a minority in America, and that's a good thing, he said.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of amazing, you know, what's going on.
David, excuse me, there is literally a war against the American middle class. It is on the way to being run off the rails. And the American middle class essentially has always been formulated by European Caucasians. That they brought the ethic over here, the work ethic. They built this country. There's nothing wrong with that. Every group has its pride, its accomplishments. And you have always been absolutely crystal clear about every racial and ethnic and religious group having their place under the sun.
They all deserve to have a society that reflects their own culture, their music, their sense of being, the way that they are. That the truth is, and we've talked about this a lot, that mankind is not one, it is many. And there are many distinctions among humanity. There are different cultures, different physical architectures, different way of being, different personality traits.
And what's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it. In fact, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. But those things, of course, are destroyed. Multiculturalism, the odd thing about it is that multiculturalism ultimately are the forcing cultures together, the forcing races together.
That's the enforcement aspect that doesn't work.
Yeah,
it's got to be a natural thing.
It creates violence. And the reason why it does that is because people are just naturally different. And if you look at most of the conflicts in the world, about 80%, according to the United Nations, of so-called civil wars are ethnically or racially rooted. And that's just the reality because people are different. And people have different modes of music. They have different modes of religion. They have different modes of all kinds of values. So when you force people together, which one are you going to do? And because in that cafeteria, you're only going to be able to play one kind of music at a time, right? So, I mean, what music is going to play? I remember in some of the military training that I did when I was in ROTC in college, going to Fort Polk, Louisiana. And, you know, the white soldiers wanted country music or rock music, and the blacks wanted soul music. And so there was always a conflict. But that seems kind of petty, but it's more than that. The truth is there are ethnic politics in the world, and there's no question in my mind that the Jewish extremists, the Zionists, are the ultimate racists on the planet. I've started off the program by saying, you know, that I went on the O'Reilly show, and before I did that, actually, this is after I did that when he said this. He had a big program the other day saying that there's no racist policy against African Americans in this country. America's not a racist country. And interestingly enough, I can disagree with him. America is a racist country today. It is a racist country that's absolutely racist and hateful. The media is absolutely a hateful, racist, genocidal operation against the European American, and they've purposefully demonized European Americans. They've characterized them as racist, which is the very worst moniker one person can give.
It's obscene what they do. You're 1,000% right.
And we've had a direct policy, an intentional policy, by the American government and the American media to produce what Biden said is a good thing, the fact that European Americans will be a tiny minority in this country. And that's really odd. When I was back in school again in 1971, 21 years old, America was still over 90% white nation. And it's natural for European Americans to be the elite, you know, or to run a nation.
Sure.
Where they're over 90% of the population. That's not racism. It's normal, and it's natural, and it's natural for every people on the earth to want to
persist. Majority rules. Come on.
Sure, of course. And now we're probably less than 70%, somewhere around 65%. Those numbers are controversial, but we're dropping fast. There are more children today in America under the age of 5 years old who are not European than were European. When in reality, there were over 99 out of 10 kids were Europeans, and European peoples created this great country. There's no way to get around that. It was European culture and values and people that honed this great nation out of the wilderness and built our great industry, our business,
and,
our universities.
We have to be, and you would be, and I'm probably cutting you off, beating you to the punch, but the eradication of the indigenous peoples of this country is a great horror. I think it was about 60 million altogether. That's what some people say.
That's and really, frankly, Jeff, that is modern. That's part of the hate campaign against Europeans. It is true.
It is. It's absolutely part of the campaign.
There's not 60
But you can look around the globe and you can find similar, almost identical patterns of civilizations being created on lesser or older or no longer vital civilizations, and the people tend to be pushed to the sidelines.
Well, listen, by today's standards, that would certainly be immoral. I see it. I think any country today that would go in and conquer another country for whatever reason, imperialistic, and exploit the people or harm the people or enslave the people, I think that would be absolutely wrong. There's a new ethic. But let's get something straight here. There's no unique evil about white people. The Indian tribes, for instance, before we came, were very distinct. They were just like races. In fact, once the peoples of Europe were like races as well. And they had a long-running battle against each other. You had a great Indian called
Indian
the Mound
Wars?
People.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever heard of the Mound people? The sure. Mound people were all the way from the Great Lakes down to the base of the Mississippi River, all through the Southland, some parts of the Midwest.
A lot of it in Missouri, all through
Missouri,
there.
Missouri, even all those areas. And the Mound people, the distinctive thing about them is they built these big burial mounds, almost like pyramids. At the mm-hmm. campus of LSU that I went to, there's two large mounds there, and that was built by the Mound people. Well, the Mound people, long before Columbus came, were driven extinct primarily by the Cherokees and other Indian tribes. They were just basically genocided. The other Indian tribes didn't make any reservations for them. They didn't have any respect for them at all, though many Americans had respect certainly for the Indian culture. They were probably... You know, the idea that there were 60 million is way off. The most scientists who've done studies on this say it was more like about a million or two in this vast expanse of land.
Really?
You can go to the...
that's interesting.
It's a very low population.
That's the lowest number I've ever heard.
They really didn't have any much normal, Western-style agriculture, and that's the boon of the population explosion. They didn't have what we call modern cities. They had small, very, very, very small type villages. They were hunter-gatherers, and you don't have any place in the world where you have great population of hunter-gatherers. The Aztecs were a little advanced, and there were probably a few more of them, but the Aztecs, for another example, the Aztecs were one of the most brutal people in the world. They had enslaved other Indian tribes. They did sacrifices.
Yeah, yeah.
They cut out the hearts on top of the pyramids. Now, I'm not trying to say this by saying I condemn the Aztecs, but what I'm trying to say is this idea that somehow European Americans are, we're so bad because we came to America. Well, if we're bad, then every people that lived on this planet are bad, because you go back far enough, there's been struggles between tribes, individuals, there's been slavery in every nation of the world. The truth is, Europeans, as far as enslaving non-Europeans, is really only existed for a very short period of time historically. We had raidings of Europe by the Corsairs in Northern Africa, the Africans, for hundreds and hundreds of years. We had all sorts of slavery going on all over the world. But
do.
Well, there is, of course. That's exactly right. And the truth is, there's no people who did more. Not only the European people ended slavery in their own. Nobody stopped that. In fact, in the South, it would have been ended. No matter if we had the war or not. In fact, it's horrible to think of a million.
It was absolutely on the way out.
Sure.
No
sure.
question. None whatsoever.
That's right.
Let's get back, if we can, to the program today. I'm going to go through the bottom of the hour break.
It's kind of an interesting discussion, but, yeah. but the point is that we came and built this great country, and if we're supposed to be ashamed, then every good Chinese who worships the ancient Chinese emperors and kings,
6,000 years,
and every African kingdom, the Zulu mm-hmm. should be ashamed, and the Ethiopians should be ashamed, and all the people should be ashamed on the earth. The only people who are allowed to be ashamed is is who are programmed to be ashamed are the European Americans.
Isn't that the
truth? That is by the people who are the most racist, the most engaging in slavery, and they were the slave traders of the world. They were the world champions of slavery.
They created the industry, ran the industry. You can find the records of the ships, who owned them, who was behind them financially. It's all there.
I read Jewish historians. That's how I learned about it. And I was the first, really, one of the first Americans that publicly brought forth this issue. And I think I even caused the Muslims and black people to realize this. I did a show called Black Perspectives in the News back in the 70s. It was a black show. The guy has already passed away, but he was a good guy. And he had a very good discussion with me, very honorable discussion with me. And we talked about the Jewish, absolute Jewish role in slavery. And ever since then, a lot of other black people picked it up and understood it, because you can read the Jewish history books. Now, they were bragging about the fact that they were the kings of slavery.
Yes, they were.
You can read the Encyclopedia Britannica. In fact, it talks about this article by Marcus and Jacob Marcus, and he writes in there about how that the Jews held the economy of Europe in their hands, and you know, and they made huge amounts of money, especially from the slave trade. You know, you can read Jewish historians talking about how they controlled the triangular slave trade, but there's no guilt about that. 40% of Jewish households in the United States of America, according to the Jewish histories, like North American Jewry, 40% of the Jewish households in America owned slaves. Only 1% of the American people, combining North and South, owned slaves. 40% of Jewish families did. Jews also ran the slave trade, which was the triangular slave trade, which was the most horrific aspect of slavery.
Ruthless.
Because you see, slavery in America, on the even on the plantations, was far, far superior to anything in the wilds of Africa. And they had their own families. They had, you know, they had a degree of freedom. You didn't have that in the, you had a horrific situation. So
let me go back to your point,
American
though.
Slavery was really the passage.
The end of slavery had already come and gone in Europe, and it was dying here. It would have been over. The Civil War was not fought over slavery issues. That was window dressing. There was more involved.
The reason why this is always brought up is because the people that now, the supremacists that control the country, these Jewish extremists, these Jewish supremacists, not all Jews, but every major Jewish organization promotes these kinds of policies. Everyone is promoting open immigration. The Jewish, we have a Jewish Hollywood, every one of the 10 largest Hollywood studios, both television and movies, and the impact they make, as well as the major papers like the New York Times, as well as the very powerful publishing outfits, the media conglomerates around the world, they're overwhelmingly Jewish. And they had to demonize European Americans and promote all these policies like open borders and get Europeans to hate themselves because they wanted to take over from us, and they have taken over from us. The Mark Brooks, the New York Times, and I talked about this on Alex's show today. In fact, they even showed the graphic. And the New York Times literally boasted, quote, about the Jewish takeover of the American elite. He boasted about that in the New York Times, and they bragged about it. That's the lead columnist for the Jewish newspaper, the New York Times. In Harvard University, which is the elite, and Alex Jones always talks about the elite, so I tried to identify the elite for them, for him and for his listeners. I showed that a perfect example is the Ivy League, and Harvard is the source of the upcoming elite of America. And you get a graduate from Harvard, you get your ticket punched. And the truth is that European Americans, who are between 65 and 70% of the population, and who are over 70% of the highest qualified students by national merit scholarships and the rest, are literally only now 20% of Harvard University and of the entire Ivy League. 20%. That's discrimination. That's racism when these qualified students are being discriminated against. Jews, who are only 2% of the population, are now, believe it or not, it's shocking, but there are more Jews at Harvard and the Ivy League than there are Gentile, European non-Jews, whose ancestors built those institutions. They were at one time 100% European American Christian universities, and these were great universities. Mm-hmm. There is massive discrimination going on. And I often tell people, I was in Mexico at a conference recently, an identitarian conference in Guadalajara, where they actually, and these were Mexican people and people from all over South America, they honored me with the opening and closing, you know, speech. They also respect Europeans, and they're opposed to Mexican immigration. But they gave me the opening and closing speech, but all over, people are understanding that the reason why these Jewish predator banks, for instance, like Goldman Sachs, have destroyed
Reserve and work your way down.
Sure. Central America, Federal Reserve, exactly. And I talked about that on Alex Jones' show. He didn't have much to say about that when I pointed out that every head of the Federal Reserve for the last three decades has been a Jewish supremacist, a Jewish extremist who supports not only the State of Israel, but all these Jewish organizations which support open borders for America, but Israel, which has DNA testing now for Jews to prove they're real Jews.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, don't forget about Israel. Apartheid, racist. They have roads for Jews only, secondary roads for Palestinians, Arabs, Christians, and so forth. They have the most racist. I view it as a privately owned corporate entity put together, created by the banksters in the city of London. I don't view it as a wholesome country. It's really an economic tool, if you look at it that way. And I think it's very easy to look at it that way. But go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, that's fine. You know, well, the point is that the point I'm making there is not only have they led, and this is one good thing of what Trump's doing, they have absolutely what they're doing, their intentions. There's no question about this. I read their articles. I read their think tanks. And I've read this. I've documented them in my books.
Uh-huh.
They have intentionally promoted massive immigration into the United States of America.
Oh, you bet.
Massive birth control among European Americans in this country.
Yeah.
They promoted all of these things and abortion and things like that because they wanted to, whatever you want to say, get their revenge. They wanted to get control over the American people in the American continent, and they've done it.
Oh, they have.
I mean, the Jewish takeover that Brooks brags about in the New York Times, it not only is destroying us, because, by the way, the European people, we're being destroyed. We have a 1.6 birth rate now. Our countries are being flooded with non-Europeans.
Right.
The media is full of nothing but hate propaganda against European peoples. They're just vicious hate. They're inciting African Americans against this, which is also causing a lot of violence against European
Americans. Well, that's very sad. It's all very sad.
It's sad. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But it's not just us either. I mean, the whole world, because the fact that they've been able to overthrow us in America is why they're suffering, why Greece is going bankrupt by Goldman Sachs, why Goldman Sachs is able to exploit the third world.
Look, I don't want to waste too much time here, but let's look. I don't know if you got a chance to talk about the control of America and its government by AIPAC, the ADL, the SPLC, B'nai B'rith, the other organized Jewish Zionist groups. They control the Congress, for God's sakes. You don't pass muster with them, the money tap stays off. You don't have a chance. You literally have to curry favor and pass, or you don't get to run. It's really that simple.
Well, that's exactly right. And that one of the important things that I was trying to explain on the show, and I must commend Alex Jones because he gave me an opportunity to say it. And I pointed out that this idea that there is just a conspiracy of rich people to control the world, of course, it doesn't make much sense, does it? It doesn't really make any sense that a few rich people are together and they just hate all humanity and want to destroy all humanity.
No.
The truth is that this elite, the banking elite and so forth, is absolutely dominated by Jewish extremists. The Jewish people, unfortunately, the Jewish religion is a racial, supremacist, hateful, murderous religion. That, I'm not saying that every Jew who goes to synagogue is a hateful, murderous person, but let me tell you, that Talmud...
The Talmudic Jews are steeped in a tradition of evil and dark. Now, the true Torah Jews is a different thing. But you're right. You got to understand the Talmud. That's the obvious banner.
There's no synagogue in the world that there's no synagogue on the planet that rejects the Talmud. Even the some of the Jews that reject the Israel, like the Nutri-Carta and so forth, they are Talmudic. And the Talmud preaches that all non-Jews are evil, that they don't have a soul.
Oh, they're cattle.
That they're not human beings. And that may sound shocking and strange and horrible and even
read it. Just do your research. Read about the Talmudic Jews and their attitudes and their beliefs. It's all right there.
See, the English translations compiled by Jewish sources, and they'll tell you, you can read it for yourself. You just have to know where to look. You can read it, and it's massive. It's not like it's something little. The chief Sephardic rabbi of Israel, by the way, it's not just the Ashkenazi. You see, the Sephardim is essentially the same way. The Ashkenazi are kind of their leaders today, but the Sephardim's the same way. The chief Sephardic rabbi of Israel was Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef was in coalition government with Netanyahu. He got up on a national broadcast, and he said, and I quote, he said, the only purpose for Gentiles, in other words, all the rest of 99.9% of humanity, the only purpose of Gentiles on earth is to serve Jews. He went on to say that a Gentile is designed to work, to bind, to sieve, to dig, to reap. And a Jew, we are designed to be an effendi, a master, and sit and eat. He went on to say that he wanted Gentiles to have a long life, just like a Jew wants his donkey to have a long life, because that donkey can serve the Jew.
He did use donkey, huh?
Absolutely, donkey. This is in the Jerusalem Post. It's automatically documented. Mm-hmm. And this guy was in coalition with the Shas party, with Netanyahu. And by the way, this is not some sort of obscure Jew. This was the head Sephardic rabbi of Israel. When he died, a man who said these incredibly hateful, horrible things against Gentiles, which is most of the people listening out there. It's you and your daughter and your mother and your father and your brother. You know, it's you that they're talking about. He literally, all right, had the largest funeral in the history of the state of Israel, and every major Jewish figure in Israel came out to honor this Jew who said the only purpose of you and I, you, me, Jeff, you, I, and most of the people listening out there, mm-hmm. the only purpose we have on the planet is only to serve these Jews. Now, that, to me, is hate. It's supremacism, but we don't get any hearing about this. And this was in the Jewish papers. The Jewish Jerusalem Post printed it. You didn't see anything about this in the American papers.
No, you wouldn't.
One of the best friends of Netanyahu, you know, and a very powerful Jew in Israel saying these things about Gentiles.
Right.
Anyway, what I showed him is that this is not a conspiracy of like rich Gentiles and rich Jews together simply to control the world and poison the world, you know, and all these things. This is absolutely it's a relationship, basically, between like, what's the word for it? Master and follower. The truth is, this is the Gentiles in this relationship. There's some Gentile bankers and there's some Gentiles who have a lot of money, but they know their position. They are in a subservient position. And I'll give you an example why. If we know who controls the international banks, we know who controls the media, we know who controls academia and so forth. If Gentiles were really in partnership with the Jews, and again, Jews are only 2% of the population of America. Gentiles are 99.9% of the population of the world. But in this country, 2%. Why in the world, if there was an equal partnership, why would Gentiles allow their children to be discriminated against and not go to the top universities in favor of a 2% Jews? Why would Israel be the only nation on earth, you know, that can have DNA testing for their...
That's amazing.
How can Israel get away with making it illegal for a Jew to marry a non-Jew? And by the way, it's not a religious requirement, because if a Jew is an atheist Jew, he or she can marry a religious Jew. That's fine. The only problem is if a non-Jew by descent marries. Mm-hmm. So it is a racial connotation. It is an ethnic, a genetic thing. Now, imagine if anybody in the United States of America, any politician, any public figure, said we should have a law to prevent intermarriage with African Americans, or a law to prevent intermarriage with Jews, or any country of Europe did that. Tell me that would be in the front page of every paper. There would be a universal condemnation. We'd practically be going to war against that country. They'd say the Nazis are back, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So So what's going on here? So this double standard shows who the real power is. We also talked about banking, and one of the Jews that worked for Alex there, who'd been working for him for a long time, was saying, "Oh yeah, but some of these early bankers weren't Jewish." And so I just pointed out, well, we talk about the Rothschilds, of course, whose five or six sons, however many it was, they started all the major banking houses of Europe, the Warburgs. We can continue to go on. Jacob Schiff was the biggest and most powerful, richest banker in the United States of America, as well as Bernard Baruch. You know, these were the people who led the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has been the most powerful banking in the world is the Federal Reserve. That's the mother of all banks today. That's it. You know, and they can affect the whole economy of the world. Again, every Federal Reserve chairman in the last three decades has been Jewish. And vice chairman, the last three vice chairmen also.
Well, they promote their own. They don't let anybody else in for the most part.
Well, that's exactly right.
By the way, don't forget, we have to take a break. Jacob Schiff's grandson married whose daughter? Al Gore's daughter. It's all bloodlines. It's all kept in the family. And they do let some outsiders in.
That is, and a lot of people have talked about this historically, is they know that if they get their bloodline into some leading Gentile, more like the modern aristocrats, that they're going to be able to control them and make them betray their interests of their own people. And that's exactly what we can say about
that's right. All right, hold on
a second.
Exactly
what we can say about a lot of other people, too.
Yeah, you bet. You bet.
And ultimately, even maybe Donald Trump. We'll talk about him, too, tonight. But Donald Trump, my God, he said that he's so happy that his children are Jews, and he says 1,000% for Israel. He said he's in favor of torture and rendition, and he wants American troops right now in the Middle East. Well, you know, that concerns me, even though I like what he's saying about the immigration issue.
Well, I concur. All right, stand by. We'll be right back talking to Dr. David Duke in just a couple of minutes. Okay, welcome back. Talking to Dr. David Duke about his visit with Alex Jones today. Thank you, Alex, for entertaining Dr. Duke, having him on, opening the door for discussion. That's our First Amendment. That's crucial to all of us. Alex, of course, the man who made some notoriety, I don't know if he wanted it or not, by saying that the Arabs own Hollywood and everybody knows it. Well, not quite.
Anyway, my respect for him went up a little bit. At least he had me on there. And I think that almost every one of his listeners, I mean, the response that I've gotten from the program is just absolutely.
It had to be phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
You're not a raving lunatic. Now let me switch gears. We don't have a lot of time.
If you look at the videos that he's got on his own site, the videos have hundreds and hundreds of comments, and they're at least 95% pro me. And anti-Jones. At least they shouldn't be anti-Jones. At least they had me on the air, but at least they were pro everything about me.
See, that reflects an honorable estimation of what you had to say, and that's very good. The idea of our Congress being owned and controlled by AIPAC is not a joke. And for those of you who have not seen the AIPAC conventions and watched America's so-called top political leaders virtually on their knees to these people, you better think again. AIPAC is the most powerful lobby in the country, the American Israeli Political Action Committee. And their money talks. And when there's money around, American politicians will whore themselves instantly. And I hate to say it, but it's the truth.
Jeff, isn't there something wrong with the picture that the most powerful lobby, the one lobby that no American can go against, is a lobby for a foreign country, and to boot, a foreign nation that has openly admitted, Golda Meir admitted it, that they committed a terrorist attack upon America in the Levant Affair, in a false flag operation trying to get us in a phony war, which would have caused the death of how many more Americans in the Levant Affair?
What about the Liberty, for God's sake?
And the Liberty, of course, 174 Americans. horribly wounded and maimed and burned. 34 Americans died. The American Secretary of State at the time, Dean Rusk, said it was a deliberate attack. And, of course, now you know you've heard the news. This vicious spy, and by the way, it's Israel which is the vicious one. Pollard was just a tool of the Israelis, who spied on America, who did more damage, according to our
Secretary of State. Most damaging spy in our history.
Yet, worst spy, he caused the death of hundreds of American operatives, because when he got the data on our spies in Europe back to the Israelis, Israel promptly traded them with the Soviets at the time during the Cold War for some gain. We don't know what it was, but we know it caused the death of these 200
spies. Well, that's the thing about Israel. They have no qualms about acquiring, improving, in some cases, and selling our most advanced technology to our enemies. They've
done it
forever.
You know, it's a disgusting debate. You know, thank God for the RINTS network and operations like this, because, you know, the Fox News is such a controlled opposition. That debate was the biggest bushwhacking I've ever seen. You know, not one question. Like, they got everybody to pledge their total 100% allegiance to Israel over America. But not one of those guys said a question, says, well, why should we be sending Israel money and support when Israel is a nation where its government has committed terrorism against the United States of America? I thought we're supposed to be bombing countries that commit terrorism against us, not sending them our money.
All true. Most of the money that Israel has at hand ultimately can be traced back to America.
Well, of course it can. Well, the whole world. If you there was a good article about Goldman Sachs a while back, the biggest predator bank in the world, and they said it's like a big, you can hear like a big sucking sound. The guy that wrote it from the Rolling Stone, pretty a brave article.
Yeah,
it's like a giant squid sucking out the life and the value of the whole world. You know. And that's what Israel does. Most of their budget actually comes from outside its own borders. It's just, you know, it is based on a massive Jewish fraud, theft all over the world, control of governments, forcing them to send them.
Look what the Jews have done to our education system. Yeah. Look what they've done with pornography, with ecstasy, with drugs. It just goes on and on and on. It's not refutable. You can't argue it.
Bolshevism, Russian Bolshevism, in fact, communism all over the world was a movement led by Jews all over the world. Our own national security said this in the early 1900s.
Right.
Scotland Yard said this. Winston Churchill said this. They did it. And, you know, they killed tens and millions of people in the Second World War. We went in the war already knowing that the Jews killed tens of millions of people in Ukraine, tens of millions of people in Russia and Eastern Europe, and we went on their side in the Second World War.
Uncle Joe, our buddy. Good God.
It shows you how much they control our media and our way of life. How many movies have we seen about the greatest mass murder of all time, which is the Jewish mass murder?
Too many to count.
But you know what? I think, Jeff, they've even killed more people now than what they did under Bolshevism now, because you can't count the number of people.
How many wars have we fought for the Jewish state? Practically every one.
You know, all these wars had a big Jewish influence. But you know what? I'm thinking about something else now. Look at Hollywood. How many lives in the United States of America over the last 40, 50 years have been destroyed by these Jewish supremacists who teach our young people that drugs are fashionable, that all these things. Edward Bernays, the nephew of Sigmund Freud, who talked half of the American people, women, to smoke cigarettes. How many babies did that stunt the brains of, destroy and kill? How many women did that destroy with cancer? And it was because of Jewish public relations, right? And they admit this. They just made it fashionable. How many Americans have been killed through sexual diseases that they've spread, including...
They promote all of it. It's all promoted. What happened on the... We got 3 minutes left, 4 minutes. What happened on the program that made you feel best today? What seemed to bother Alex, if anything?
Well, I felt really good when Jones was saying, oh my God, I got a headache. Not because I wanted him to have a headache, but because he really didn't have any answers for these things, and I think that he knows, and I feel sorry for him in a way, because it is a danger to him to talk about this and let me expose these items on a show,
right?
Because he does have some Jewish sponsors and that type of thing. And
well, he's tied into the Bronfman family. If you know, I don't know if she still is, but years ago, his attorney was Elizabeth Schurig, a Texas Jewish power attorney, who was also the attorney for Holly Bronfman. That's Edgar Bronfman.
Well, I don't want to say,
you know,
again, at least he had me on, so he's trying to do something. That's more than I can say for a lot of people. You're doing a great deal. I'm doing a great deal.
Listen, you know the price that you've paid over the years, I've paid, and all we're trying to do is to present reality. Let you folks out there make up your own mind, which you have a God-given right to do. I was smeared recently, once again, by another major Jewish organization, full of lies, misstatements, wrong statements, wrong dates, wrong this, wrong that. Just amazing stuff. And yet they get away with it. Nobody will confront them.
Well, wait till you get the full David Duke treatment. I hope you don't ever get that treatment when you're approaching,
I was almost
approaching
killed,
U.S. Senate. You
on
know?
April 24th. Indications are that was an attempted assassination.
It may have been. There's no question about it.
We just don't know.
But I tell you one thing. That one thing is good. I like the fact that the Trump is changing some of the debate on this issue.
Oh, he's turned it upside down. He said, no, he says they've all got to go. And yesterday he said, more anchor babies.
Mind. I mean, I think it's really great. And
no more anchor babies, David. No more anchor babies.
Him, but he's a, you know what he is? He's a good businessman, and he knows what sells, and he knows that the American people really want to hear this thing, and that's how he's going after the nomination.
If he can bring back 100, 200,
wins,
if he can bring back a couple hundred thousand jobs,
he's up the ante, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think he could bring back a couple hundred thousand jobs, which would be very nice. A couple million would be better. He is a businessman, and there's no question about it. He knows how to make things work, and we need that. We don't need a career politician with polished little sound bites that their advisors give them. That's why the rest of them look like such horses' asses. Here's Trump speaking from his head on his feet, telling it like it is, and the rest of them are waiting to put in their little recorded messages.
And also, you know, he's teaching us a lesson to people. You know, people like you and me speak like men. We talk specifically and strongly about things, and we're not cowards. And the way he speaks, so tough, is kind of a lesson for us to really speak our mind and be.
Well, it's like men used to be.
That's the way, and that's one of his big attractions.
Yeah.
But I must say this, though. I mean, the ties he has to Israel and the rest of the thing is very disturbing. I don't think I'd ever trust them. I'm not sure I'll vote for them, but I like what's going on in terms of the discussion that's happening. We'll see.
You know, maybe when he gets in, he'll change course a little bit.
We've got to continue to keep this envelope moving, and we got to continue to. And again, this is my main speech. I do this every day of my life. You know, there is no redemption for the American people, for the people of Europe, people of the world, unless we overthrow the Jewish extremist power of globalism and the power over our country. If that doesn't happen, European Americans are going to continue to go the way of the dodo bird, because that's where we're going. Where our very life form is being destroyed on this planet. We have got to stand up and defend our very genes, the ancestors who've made so many sacrifices for us. We've got to stand up and defend our children's lives and our children's future. If we do that, we're less than men. We're less than real, honest women. We're less than what we must be if we're going to survive. We've got to survive. We have a moral right to do so, a God-given right to do that, a natural right to do it. And unless we overthrow these evil SOBs who are destroying our culture, destroying our values, destroying our people, making us sick, just casting us into absolute porn and garbage and degeneracy and destructiveness and war, unless we do that, we have no future.
Look at the feminization of the American male by the media. Come on, that's no accident, all right? You got to understand that. It's all traceable back to Bolshevism. Every damn bit of it.
Well, it's all cultural Bolshevism, but what happened is the Second World War, there was a division to a degree between Zionists and communists. But Zionist capitalists like Jacob Schiff was the chief financier of the Russian Revolution. Today, basically, they've adopted an entire world Zio cultural Bolshevik modicum or operation. Mm-hmm. That's what's mm-hmm. going on now. We are being gradually dragged into political correctness. We are being dragged in, but Jeff, you know, the next step will be the gulags, will be the mass murders. When they get the total power, it'll happen here just like it happened in Soviet Russia.
You know, I will take a small exception there and put on the table that in many ways we are already in the gulag. The gulag is called usury and interest, and we are enslaved to it.
Well, I don't think it's ultimately going to happen, because I think our people are going to wake up.
Let's hope.
Put some blood in our veins, you know. We got to put some courage in our veins.
We got to wake up. We got to wake up. All right. Thank you, David.
I'll be on the radio tomorrow morning, so I'm looking forward to hearing from you. We'll have a huge audience tomorrow after the Jones Show. And after this show, after your show, I always have a big boost.
Very good. Thank you. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Dr. David Duke, and again, little hat tip to Alex for having him on. Thank you, Alex. I think that was really important for the general dialogue and to keep the human intellectual spirit alive. Okay? All right. Fair enough. Be right back.